Ghost Night Media Studios and Paranormal Underground Magazine. Welcome to Paranormal Underground Radio. It's time to explore the unexplained with your hosts, Rick Hale and Karen Frazier.
Well, hi, everybody, and welcome to the very first broadcast of Paranormal Underground Radio. My name is Karen Frazier. I am the managing editor at Paranormal Underground. If you've listened to our podcasts, I just want to let you know that being on live radio does not make me sound like an adolescent boy, but having a cold does, so I'll apologize for that in advance. I'd like to introduce my co-host. He's one of our very popular authors at Paranormal Underground. It's Rick Hale. Hey, Rick.
Hey, how you doing, Karen? And how is everybody out there?
I'm doing great. So, first show, you ready to do it?
I am ready to do it, yes.
Very good. So I also just kind of wanted to give everybody a heads up. Rick and I were talking a little bit before the show, so he's already been warned. I have a kidney stone, and I am on a little bit of narcotics this evening to control the pain of the kidney stone. So Rick has promised that if I get out of control, he's going to wrest control from me and take over the show, right?
If all of a sudden we hear like snoring or something like that, I'm just going to be like, all right, and we're off of Karen.
That's right. If we hear a thud or anything else, you know, Cheryl can always hit the dump button. She can always dump me. So we also have on our boards and on our phones, although we're not taking phone calls tonight, we're just taking questions in the chat room. But on our phones and boards, we have Cheryl Knight, who is the publisher, or not the publisher, the editor-in-chief of the magazine. Cheryl, you want to pop on and say hi real quick?
Hey, everybody. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Hey, Cheryl, while I have you on, do you want to just give a real quick intro to people about Paranormal Underground and what the magazine is and what they can expect to see in July?
Yeah, sure. Paranormal Underground has been around for about 2 years now. June was our 2-year anniversary. We're excited to hit that milestone. And basically, we cover all sorts of paranormal phenomena, including paranormal activities such as ghosts and hauntings, also UFO phenomena, and things like conspiracy theories, which we'll be covering in July, thanks to Rick.
Fun writing that one, I assure you.
For July, we have a lot of great things in store. We are going to be featuring Flying Monkey Paranormal Investigation, and Karen wrote that article. It's a paranormal
best
group.
Best brute name ever, Flying Monkey Paranormal Investigation. I love it. I had to interview him with a name like that.
Yeah, they're out of Dixon, California, which is in Solano County up north, and their founder, Don Duncan, joined us for a Q&A in the July issue, so that should be pretty good. They've investigated places like Preston Castle and the Miner's Cabin and Washoe Club in Nevada. And then we'll also be featuring Scott Tepperman, and he is the newest Ghost Hunters International member. And he joined them for this season. And he's also a paranormal investigator and has his own group called the Association for Locating Paranormal and Haunted Activity.
And I have to tell you, whenever you say Scott Tepperman, I think of the kid on South Park, Scott Teneman, who's Cartman's sixth grade nemesis. So I'll have to get over that because I understand he's going to be on one of an upcoming show as well. Is that right?
He's going to be on next week, as a matter of fact. Scott will join us next week to talk about the newest season, which is about to start in July.
Great.
So, yeah, we'll get some information about the types of locations that they investigated, and also a lot about his own personal journey in the paranormal. So that should be good. Mm. We've also gotten the July issue monthly TV watches. We have equipment updates. We also have a lot of paranormal experiences. We have an ongoing column from Carolyn Hughes, and it's a very popular one. It's basically covering paranormal experiences within her hotel, which is on the Gettysburg battlefield, and that is called Diary of a Haunted Hotel. So... We have her in every issue. We have Ghost Hunter Case Files.
And she's in the chat room right now as Gettysburg Lady, too, I see. Hi, Carolyn, in the chat room.
You know, I actually can't wait. I was just saying, I actually can't wait to read that because my grandfather's grandfather fought for the 15th Alabama in Gettysburg.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, that'll be kind of cool to read that.
You need to talk to Carolyn then.
It's a good call up. I enjoy reading it every month. That is an active place and stuff happens there all the time.
Yeah, we've also got, just to wrap it up, because I know we got a full show here, we have Cryptids and Mythological Creatures, each issue. We have Haunted History, Haunted Sites, Are We Alone, which is an alien column, basically. And
it's written by an alien.
That didn't come out quite right, did it?
Well, Rick writes that column sometimes, so, you know, sometimes I wonder.
I do believe they prefer extraterrestrial or non-solar entity, so.
I'll have to remember that. Anyway, if people want to check out past issues, they can do that in our archives, which is at paranormalunderground.net, and you see the magazine archive tab on the left, and just click on that and see any past issue that you like. And if you want to see the current issue for each month, you just have to register for the forum, which is completely free. And go to the forum and click on the current month's magazine and just browse it at your leisure.
Very cool. Okay.
Awesome.
All right. And so that's every month. We have the June issue out now, and that's got a lot of good articles in it as well, including one, I think I wrote one for June that was about channels, right? And channeled entities.
You did,
Yeah, I believe that's in June, and Rick has a few articles in June. Rick's articles are always a lot of fun to read. He writes a lot about cryptids and UFOs.
Yes.
So, okay, thanks, Cheryl. I also want to say hi to Chad, who is in the chat room. It's Chad Wilson. If you have any questions for us or for our guests that we're going to have on here in a little while, you can ask the question of Chad in the chat room, and he'll talk to us. Chad, if you want to turn on your mic real quick and say hi, that'd be great.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, Chad.
What's happening, Chad?
I'm excited.
Yeah, well, so keep the chat room under control and let us know if there are any questions. And we're going to have you back on a little later, too, when we do our roundtable lightning round, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. All right, we'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
All right. So, Rick,
since
this is our first show, I thought maybe I would have you just sort of give people a little bit of your resume as far as what you do with the paranormal, who you are, that type of thing.
Okay. I think that, you know, my very first paranormal entity that I ever experienced. I was about 8 years old and was spending the night at my grandparents' house in Franklin Park, Illinois. I don't know if anybody's, you know, familiar with that. It's about northwest of Chicago. And got up to use the bathroom in the middle of the night, and there's this female entity floating in the middle of the hallway. It was the most amazing thing I've ever seen. And what I remember about it was, is I was not even afraid. All I could do was just stand there and look at her, watched her as she turned around and floated, you know, out of my sight. So that's basically what got me interested in the paranormal. So I've been doing this now for, you know, 28 years.
That's right. And you investigate with a team. And what's the name of your team that you investigate with?
It's McHenry County, excuse me, McHenry, I'm sorry, hang on.
They're going to call you on this, you know.
Sorry about that. McHenry County Paranormal Research Group. Sorry about that. I blanked there for a second. But yeah, I've been doing that now with them since November, and I've had quite a few experiences working with them. And it's, you know, the thing that I like about, you know, working with them is that it really is it's a family environment. We all, you know, try our best to work well together, and I think we all do. And, you know, our mediums are great. Nancy Laporta and Vicky, I can never pronounce her. I'll just say Vicky because I can never pronounce her name correctly. Sorry, Vicky, if you're listening. But, you know, it's basically, you know, what I'm doing at this moment.
And you also have a book that's coming out.
Yeah, The Geek's Guide to the Paranormal. poltergeist, ghosts, and demons. And, you know, writing has always been something that I was pretty good at. And, you know, just I brought it to you guys. You guys were interested, and you were like, all right, let's hook it up and let's do it.
Yeah, great. I haven't actually gotten a look at it yet. Cheryl's had it, but mm-hmm. I know it's done. I know it's in the process of being edited, and I think that we hope to release it this fall. Does that sound right to you?
Yeah, it sounds good. Yeah, it sounds right to me.
Yeah, and I actually am sort of a fledgling paranormal investigator. I write about the paranormal more than I investigate, although I've been lucky enough that a lot of people are willing to take me with them from time to time. And I actually wrote a book that came out in March called Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, in which I talk about my experiences at the site of the 1910 Wellington, Washington avalanche, where 96 people were killed. And it's a pretty amazing place. And so I actually investigate up there quite a lot as well. But that's kind of my experience. I don't have you've been doing it since you were knee high to a grasshopper.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Well, not me. Yeah, well, I spent so much of my time just denying that anything like this could be possible, which is really funny because when I was in my 20s, I lived in this apartment that was just spooky as hell. And mm-hmm. I had this unseen thing that would sit down on the bed next to me, and you could actually feel the bed depress, and you could feel like wind blowing across your cheek, and it would whisper, I love you, in my ear. And I spent about 20 years denying that that could have been possible, and I've sort of had a change since then. So,
well, that's awesome, because, I mean, usually that's the misconception that people have between skepticism and cynical denial. You know, a skeptic will actually, you know, investigate, listen to what's going on, and then if there's some kind of evidence there, they'll be like, all right, I'm going to believe this and, you know, think it's possible. Whereas a cynic just says, no way, forget it. That just doesn't happen. So, you know, that's the difference.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, I didn't want it to be real for quite a while. And then, and it just sort of comes to a point, if you've been around it enough, that you can no longer deny it when things happen and they continue to happen. You start to think, okay, well, maybe there's something to this. But to bring
Chad back
on real quick. Yeah, we are all energy. You're absolutely right. Hey, Chad, do you want to come back on for a minute?
Okay.
Okay. So, one of the things I forgot to ask you when I had you on before, I'm sorry, it's the drugs, mm-hmm. is you actually, Paranormal Underground was your brainchild. And so I wanted to know why you started Paranormal Underground magazine, this wonderful thing that we've all had such a good time writing for.
Mm-hmm. Well, initially it started with, you know, just looking around online for different magazines, and I, you know, they cost money, and I'm like, you know, why would they have to charge for, you know, to read about something that I enjoy? So me and my the editor in chief, Cheryl Knight, you know, we decided just as a hobby starting out, we'd try to make a magazine that basically we would let people look online at for free. And basically, it's just a vehicle to give people, you know, a voice to talk about their personal experiences, or to educate people about personalities in the field, about equipment, just what have you. And it's grown from there, and it's you know, it's gotten bigger and bigger every year.
Well, one of the things that I've always appreciated about it is that it's more about the dialogue than the belief system. And so one of the things that I've always liked about Paranormal Underground is that as long as people are talking about it, it doesn't matter what they believe. We're willing to read articles, write articles, and hear all viewpoints. And that's one of the things I've always really appreciated about it.
Yeah.
Well, I think the thing that brought me to it when I first saw it and, you know, asked if I could write to you guys was I liked that, one, it had a sense, you know, a lot of it had a sense of humor, and two, it was written by normal people and, you know, not some crusty old parapsychologist who hasn't got off his fat butt in years and out in the field. So it's, sorry to any parapsychologists out there, but
especially the crusty old ones.
But I, you know, that's what I really appreciated about it, because it's everyday people who have these experiences and they have questions and they need answers.
Yeah, absolutely. And more people are sort of having an interest in looking into it and seeing what's going on out there. And I know a lot of people think that paranormal is a fad and it's a wave that people are riding. But, mm-hmm. you know, when you've been doing it for as long as you have, and I've had an interest in it for years, even though I was in denial. And I think that it is a fad for some people, but for other people, it's a really legitimate field of study.
Yeah, I think so, too. You know, I just think what's happened is, you know, one of the things that makes us distinctly human is looking outside of ourselves to try and find something greater. And, you know, finally, our time has come in the field where, you know, you could turn the TV on and find about 50 different, you know, television shows or books or magazines or whatever that you want to, you know, that you want to read, listen to, watch, whatever. And, you know, I just think that that time has finally come.
Yeah, and I'm glad it has. I definitely am glad it has. So, Chad, still there? Anything else that you wanted to add?
Yeah, just that we are always looking for, you know, different people's points of view. And, you know, you can either come to our website at paranormalunderground.net and, you know, maybe post in the forums if you have a question or... if you have, maybe you have an article you'd like to write, maybe you can send a query to our editor@paranormalunderground.net.
Right. And we also have blogs. We have a place where members can go and post things like personal experiences. If they want to post some evidence, pictures, EVP, they can do that in our gallery. We have a members blog where members can actually write a blog for us if they want, you know, and as long as it is appropriate and family friendly, we leave it up there. And Rick writes a blog, and I write a blog for the magazine. Rick, what are you writing about right now?
Oh, right now, you know, it's about my, you know, adventures, adventures in ghost hunting. I know that that sounds kind of lame, but, you know, writing, chronicling what we do as McHenry County Paranormal Research Group. Obviously, I can't really provide too much evidence, and I can't really provide names because we have confidentiality agreements, and I don't feel like hiring a lawyer. So, but you know, that's why pretty much, you know, that's why I change everything. But you know, I've got a lot of positive feedback concerning it, and you know, I want to keep doing it. And right now, I know I need to finish up, but the a house that we did in Lake County here in Lake County, Illinois, you know, turns out to be a home that was a depot for the Underground Railroad. And you know, that was, you know, really fascinating, you know, for me, because I'm a major history buff. And that's one of the things that I love about the paranormal is the history aspect of it.
Yeah, me too. I think that that's very cool. I probably wouldn't pay much attention to history if it wasn't for the paranormal. So, yay.
Yeah.
So, hey, let's talk real quickly about who our guests are going to be. We're going to bring them on here in about 10 minutes. But I actually went out, and for our first show, I decided that this was the person that I wanted to talk to, and his name is Jason Haxton. He's been on our show before, and he owns an object called the Dybbuk Box. So did you get a chance, Rick, to look at the Dybbuk Box site and see what it's all about?
Oh, absolutely. It's, you know, I first heard about the Dybbuk Box about a year ago, and I thought it was pretty fascinating. And I'm kind of hoping one day to, capture a ghost in my humidor, and then I could sell that online. But, I think that, from what I've seen, it sounds like it's pretty legit, especially when you got the Dybbuk, which is, you know, a very ancient demon or lost soul in Jewish folklore.
That's right. And the Dybbuk Box, for people who have never heard of it before, it's an old wine cabinet that Jason actually, I don't know if he got it on eBay or not, but he'll kind of tell the history of it when he comes on with us. But when he got it, he was aware of the history that it had. And it sort of seems to bring some, I guess you could say, misfortune to some of the people who own it. He actually keeps it in a gold-lined acacia wood ark to keep it from harming himself and his family. And so, mm-hmm. and what's interesting about Jason is that he is a museum curator, and so he's very well versed in antiquities. And he's pretty sure there's something to this. And then the other guest that we have is coming on with Jason. We have the two Jasons, which is going to be really confusing, I'm sure. And that's Jason Offit, and he's writing the book about the Dybbuk Box. He's working with Jason Haxton. And Jason is writes several paranormal things as well. And you said that you've read some of his stuff, Rick?
Yeah, actually I have. I really enjoy his blog From the Shadows. I you know, found that, you know, really fascinating. Also, I've read his book on Haunted Missouri, although I've never been to Missouri. I saw it in the library one day and just picked it up and read it, and I thought it was great. I think he's a really fantastic writer.
Well, good. I'm looking forward to talking to both of them. We'll have to come up with some kind of a classification system so that when we say Jason, they don't both say what. So maybe they have that worked out. What do you think?
Well, maybe Jason O and Jason H.
How about, like, we could do, like, Alex Rodriguez. They could be J-Hacks and J-Op. No, I don't like that second one. Never mind.
That's awesome.
I think, okay, so we'll have to come up with a different system other than that. The A-Rod system is not going to work for the two Jasons.
No.
So do you have any investigations coming up, Rick, that are interesting?
Yeah, actually, we do. We have one, you know, as I said before, just allow me to preface it with this. I can't really share too much because of confidentiality issues. But we do have one coming up in the middle of July, which I can't wait for because I love the darker stuff when it comes to the paranormal. And apparently this home has been experiencing real negative entities for years now. And finally they decided to have their home cleansed and get rid of it. And, you know, allegedly there's also a portal and a vortex. You know, a portal is
wow.
A place, yeah, where spirits can come and go, and a, you know, vortex being, you know, spinning energy or whatever, where things can come and go from as well. So, you know, one of my favorite authors, Ambrogno, can't remember his first name all of a sudden, but anyways, he always talks about portals and vortexes where creatures from a different dimension can come into our world. And, you know, I've actually experienced that with the one investigation that we did in Lake County, Illinois. Again, sorry, I can't say what town exactly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we found that the portal was actually the window in the front room where the spirits were coming and going in. And I actually have a great EVP that's where I capture one of the voices of the spirits that says they want us to come in through the window. That was pretty awesome. That just confirmed that, yeah, this window was a portal.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah. It was a very, very cool investigation. Definitely one of my favorites.
Yeah. Oh, hey, I know one of the things we forgot to mention, Rick.
Mm-hmm.
One of the most important things. You're a dad-to-be.
I am a dad-to-be this December. Yes, December 17th.
So you're practicing not sleeping, I'm going to assume, because you'll never sleep again.
Yeah, well, you know, my wife and I, we have something worked out because I work nights about, you know, 4 to 5 days a week. And, of course, she works during the day. So, you know, we had, like, this whole elaborate plan set up. And, you know, hopefully it'll work for us, but definitely can't get a
beat on my
schedule.
You know, best laid plans. You clearly don't have any young ones yet because you'll know that nothing you plan ever works. I haven't actually had a full night's sleep in 14 years, and my son will be 14 in August.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, I mean, I've had 10 years of working for a residential treatment facility with kids who have behavioral learning as well as conduct disorders. So
right.
I've gotten pretty good at saying the word no, but hopefully when I tell my kid no, I won't get a chair thrown at my head like, you know, happens at least once or twice a week where I work. So
yeah,
we'll see what happens.
Well, you know, I think that if you get a chair thrown at your head within the next year when you tell your child no, that you might want to investigate and see what's going on there, because that sounds like it would be a little bit paranormal.
Sounds like a demonic possession case. And you know what? Considering it's my kid, wouldn't surprise me.
Oh, well, you know what it'll be is the first time that your children looks at grandma and, you know, you hear yourself come out of your child's mouth. I got to tell you, that is one of the most disconcerting things you can ever experience is the first time your child looks at your mother and sounds exactly like you. I was, I can't even remember what it was my son said, but He was maybe about four, and he says, he's talking to his grandmother, and he says, "Oh, honestly, grandmother." And I thought, oh my God, he got that from me.
Well, you know what's funny is like, I come from a family that's really super fundamentalist evangelical Christian. Mm-hmm. And everything that I do, my mom thinks is of the devil.
So
I can't wait for my kid to, you know, to go to his grandma one day and, "Hey, look, grandma, I got this new EMF detector. I can't wait to use it." She'll probably, you know, call in a priest or a minister or whatever right away. So, you know.
Well, you know, you could maybe teach your child to, like, fake projectile vomit pea soup.
That'd be awesome. I do that already when I'm over there.
Your mother's a lucky woman, I can tell.
Oh, indeed she is. Just ask her. Just ask my sister. Anyways.
Well, you know, my parents sort of think that it's a little strange that I do this too. Although they've sort of come to terms with it, because I have, you know, every time I write a story, I did a story here about 2 years back now that was, mm-hmm, where I went and had a past life regression hypnotherapy session. And I called my mom and I said, "You know, Mom, I need to check out some things," and started explaining it to her. And she said, you did what? But they've come a long way, because they have since, they sat down and they read the book, "My Dad Wants to Go Up to Wellington with Me." And I think they maybe even read an article here and there. So they do come to terms with it ultimately, I think, you know, because they love us anyway.
Well, I actually get more support from my in-laws than I do my own parents. I have a better relationship. And that sounds weird coming from a guy. I have a better relationship with my mother-in-law than I do my own mom.
Yeah,
that is the
yeah.
weirdest thing you'll ever hear in your life.
Okay. Hey, you know what? We need to go to break. And when we come back, we're going to come back with our two guests on the line. So we're going to go to break, and we will be back in just a couple minutes with the two Jasons.
Hi, I'm Chad Wilson, publisher and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
And I'm Cheryl Knight, editor-in-chief and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
Every month, Paranormal Underground explores the unexplained with a free monthly online magazine.
We take an in-depth look at all kinds of unexplained phenomena, talk with some of the field's top experts, and share the latest news and information about the paranormal.
Visit us at ParanormalUnderground.net, where you can read the magazine online, explore our paranormal evidence galleries, watch videos, participate in discussions, or read blogs with some of our writers and editors.
We hope you'll join us. Visit ParanormalUnderground.net and explore the unexplained.
Do you want to keep up with what's going on at Paranormal Underground?
Then tweet us on Twitter at ParanormalUG.
Or follow us on Facebook at Paranormal Underground.
Meet us on MySpace, Paranormal Underground.
There's no need to be in the dark about what's going on at Paranormal Underground. Join us on your favorite social networking site today.
Hi, this is Karen Frazier, author of Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, a new book from Ghost Night Media. In summer of 2009, I visited Wellington, Washington, a former railroad town in the Cascade Mountains of Washington State, where the worst avalanche disaster in the history of the United States occurred. 96 people lost their lives. What I found there changed my life forever. Before I visited Wellington, I wasn't sure that I believed in ghosts or even in the human soul. Now I know for sure that ghosts are real and that our souls go on after we die. You can read all about my experiences at Wellington in my new book, Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, which is on sale at Amazon.com. To learn more, visit avalancheofspirits.com.
Thank you. location identification.
You're listening to Z-Talk.
The Radio views expressed
operating frequency
on ztalkradio.com.
The views expressed and opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Z-Talk Radio, its affiliates, or sponsors.
Hey, this is Rick and Karen back with Paranormal Underground. I just wanted to tell you guys that the music that you just heard was by composer Kevin MacLeod, and the music was Long Road Ahead, a beautiful piece of Celtic music. And how you doing, Karen? You still there?
I'm still here, and I'm going to shout out to everybody in the chat room because Ghost Hunter 50, one of our longtime members at Paranormal Underground, wanted me to. So, hey, everybody in the chat room, if you have questions, ask them, and Chad will let us know.
Okay, on our first flagship show, our very first show, we have Jason Haxton and Jason Offit. How you doing, guys?
Doing well.
Excellent, excellent. Jason Haxton is the... says, after purchasing the box from its second owner in February 2004, university curator Jason Haxton erected a site, and I can't read, the dibbickbox.com, to field all the requests to talk about, examine, or even just discuss his Dybbuk box. Everyone from rabbis to curious Gentiles, I think that's hilarious, express interest in seeing the box driving Haxton up a wall. Visitors to the site have complained to Haxton of strange headaches, nightmares, and other plagues. And Jason Haxton had his own strange encounters with the box as well. You know, maybe a little bit later on, you could tell us about those strange encounters that you had, Jason. How about that?
Oh, I'd be happy to.
Great. And our second guest we have on the show, Jason Offit. How you doing, Mr. Offit?
I'm doing quite well, thanks.
Great. Jason has been a longtime print journalist. He teaches journalism at the Northwestern Missouri State University. He covers numerous paranormal topics in his weekly newspaper column, From the Shadows, also seen at fromtheshadows.blogspot.com, and has written articles for Nexus Magazine, which, you know, Jason is one of my favorite, Fate, UFO Digest, and Missouri Light Magazine, and the X Magazine as well. His books on the paranormal, What Lurks Beyond the Paranormal in Your Backyard, Darkness Walks, Shadow People Among Us, and Haunted Missouri, A Ghostly Guide to the Show Me State's Most Spirited Spots, which I really enjoy, Jason.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I really, really like your stuff. I'm actually a fan. You can find those at Amazon.com. Jason lives in Merrillville, Missouri with his lovely family, goes on the occasional ghost hunt, and assured those who won't at least consider humans evolved from monkeys simply don't have children. I'm about to find that out in about 6 months myself.
Well, good luck with that.
Thank you very much.
So, welcome, guys. Hey, I was wondering, before we brought you on, you're both Jason. Is there some way that we can differentiate you? Because my system apparently is not going to work. I realized as I was saying it that it sounded dirty, and so I had to stop.
I might want to hear what your system was.
Well, I was going to use the A-Rod system, so we were going to have J-Hacks and J-Off, but, you know. I think Jason, you get the Jason off, J-Off, you get the short end of the stick on that one.
Yeah, you know, thank you.
Unless he's used to be called that, then, you know, that's okay. How about it, Jason? Used to be called,
well, you know, it's really really kind of funny. One of my first cousins is named Jim, and he grew up in Virginia, and his classmates just pummeled him with the whole, you know, J-Off thing, and none of the people I grew up with ever made that connection, so I was lucky.
Well, leave it to a woman on Percocet to come up with that.
So she's been tripping all night.
Yeah, really. So J-Hacks.
It could be J-H or J-O, too.
Hey, there you go. Let's talk about the Dybbuk box a little bit. We've talked before, and as you know, I am just a huge fan of your story and of what you've got going on with that thing. So can you give the listeners just a little bit of a synopsis of what's up with the Dybbuk box?
Basically, it was not... I'm not a big fan necessarily of paranormal. I work in a museum. We work with artifacts. working in a medical museum, we work with human remains, bones, nervous systems, strange devices that were supposed to make you better but probably killed you. And so being around these types of artifacts, it was kind of unique that having an intern from the college, you know, college students are great because they're young, they're energetic, and they're not afraid of anything. And so one of our college interns had actually gotten involved with the Dybbuk box, purchased it, and then brought the information to us kind of after the fact, saying, well, what do I do with it, and what's this all about? And so, of course, us being used to getting things dropped off on our doorsteps to investigate, we're fascinated. Looked into the story, and that's how I kind of became involved. Really just wanted to know more about the artifact, but certainly didn't want the artifact in my life. But it came to pass that the only way that I was going to really get to see it was to own it, because the roommate that had it, that belonged with this intern, just basically said he was freaking out and just wanted to be done with it. And the only way he was going to be done with it was to pass it on through purchase, which seems to be the way to pass on this thing. Mm-hmm. And so I bought it, and I'm very nervous about buying it, but did go ahead and buy it and start the research, and had, as I mentioned, yeah, things that health issues, insect infestations, skin burns, exploding lights, flowery scents followed by urine scents, floating shadows, water being drawn to areas where it's like strictly dry. So light flashes, all of these things kind of followed with this item once I brought it into my home. And so then kind of realizing now what I've done, how do I at least protect myself and family, and started working then with Kabbalah students, rabbis, and those that know the paranormal, and even those that study physics, what's the best way to contain whatever might be residual energy or a Dybbuk, or however, an imprint, and basically work with them kind of from all angles, secure this item, and feel pretty comfortable that that's been happened, at least if I don't bother it, it seems to not bother me as much.
How does one bother the Dybbuk box?
Getting it out and basically just, you know, which is tricky because it has this one unique quality. There is a scent about this box that is not the flowery scent or the urine scent. It sounds like the 4th of July somewhere.
Yeah.
You can see firecrackers going off.
My neighbors are going crazy.
Yeah. I thought maybe Rick had chili for dinner, so I'm glad to know it's firecrackers.
Rural, it was spaghetti tonight.
Yeah. Rural Missouri, we love our fireworks. But
yeah,
anyway,
that's right.
It has its own unique scent about the box itself, and that basically causes you want to get it out. And just thinking about it, it's kind of like a bit of an addiction. And I don't know if that's its own way of drawing itself back into the public, is you really start to crave this unique scent that's very woody and very clean and clear. So I'm just saying that is its normal odor besides the jasmine in the urine. And so, again, keeping it away means basically keeping it in long-term storage within an acacia box, which is a very protective wood from Jewish mysticism, along with lined in gold, which at the rate of gold cost these days is a pretty expensive process.
And it's a beautiful box. I've seen pictures of that acacia wood box, and it's gorgeous.
Mm-hmm. Oh, good. Yeah, you can borrow it and have it set up on your countertop.
Mm-hmm. I don't think I want that. I think that I would probably have my kidney explode if I had the Dybbuk box here at my house. And so I would like to avoid that at all costs. Oopsie, you know, now you hear my dogs going.
You know, what I think is interesting about the scent, scent that you talk about, Mr. Haxton, is, you know, usually a scent of urine or garbage or even rotting flesh is usually associated with, you know, an inhuman or a demonic entity, whereas, you know, something that smells good, you know, like roses or like, you know, a really fresh-smelling wood usually has something to deal with a positive spirit. In your personal opinion, and I know that you said that you're not a paranormal fan, but would you say that this is a negative spirit?
I really not sure on that. And some people have even said there could be multiple things attached to this, which is why you get a jasmine flowery scent 1 minute and a urine, you know, the next is. Right. But what I've discovered is when it is disrupted, meaning if it's been brought out or moved or any change has gone on with it, that is when the urine scent comes out. It is almost as if when you take someone to a new environment and they're uncomfortable, for the time being, you get this, you know, oppressive smell. And then once mm-hmm. things kind of settle down, things kind of go back to normal.
Right.
So, Jason, we have a question from our chat room, actually. And sure. What he wants to know, Paul in the chat room wants to know, where and when did the Dybbuk box originate?
It would have been probably in the 19... The concept of it is about from the 1960s. It was actually being reproduced to represent old magic from Europe that had gone wrong and basically was in the process of recreating the scenario, the artifacts that had released a spirit to basically put those articles back into play and try to undo what didn't work. That is the family's concept of why they dabbled into this mysticism, was really they felt they accidentally did some harm, and now we're trying to make retribution by recreating the box to finish what had gone wrong and come to some resolution. However, it was never meant to actually be outside of the family. It really is a very personal item. And even mm-hmm. when I was in Portland, about a month ago, the family still feels that this is a very personal family issue, and they don't want to talk a lot about it. When they do, it's always, you know, in little bits here and there, and then kind of they back off of it, and it's like it's just too much. Because, again, it's considered very personal and very unique.
So how do they feel about the fact that there's some attention to it, that this book is being written? And is the movie still in the works, or is that sort of on the shelf for now?
Actually, no. It's actually full steam ahead. If you do any Google searching, you can just type in just type in Dybbuk Box, and you'll find out the companies that are running it. And it's really high end. They have some great screenplay writers. 5 in all have written various screenplays. So 3 screenplay writers basically inherited the curse because nothing they wrote was good enough for what was really happening. And so they're trying to get a fictional retelling of this nonfiction item. You can go to what's called the Internet Movie Database, IMDb.com, mm-hmm. and it'll have all the facts, which shows you that, yeah, this in 2012 will be out as a movie. Jason, who is a noted paranormal writer, Jason Offutt, and I are actually putting together all the material so that you can have it all in one spot, and we expect to have that out within a year.
Great. Go ahead, Rick.
I was just going to say it comes out in 2012, so maybe we could blame the Dybbuk Box movie for the end of the world as we know it.
Yeah, it's not coming out in December, is it?
Well, the Mayans made a special pact with me to make sure the movie came out to curse everybody simultaneously during their anniversary of the end of the world.
So, Jason Offutt, I wanted to ask you, because I know that some of the people, the creatives who have worked with this, have sort of run up against some kind of interesting situations and some difficulties in creating a story surrounding the Dybbuk Box and doing it in a creative way. How about you? What's been your experience so far?
It's not a not necessarily a creative way. I'm just going to tell the story of the Dybbuk Box, the nonfiction story. I'm a journalism teacher. Was a journalist for a long time, and all of my books on the paranormal, that's how I approach them, a journalistic way. I just do research and write what happened, which is what I'm planning to do with this.
So Jason has kind of an interview style that will go with it, investigative reporting, interviewing.
Yeah, great.
So it'll be covering all the different, you know, the different stories and stuff like that, what people have experienced with the Dybbuk Box.
Right, and people who see the movie will see the fictional part, and then they'll go, well, what's the real story? Well, this book is the real story.
Okay.
And have you talked to I know that one of the previous owners lives out here in the Pacific Northwest. Have you had a chance to talk with him? The first guy where the story sort of came to light, the first eBay seller, I guess he was. Have you talked with him?
Jason Offutt and I are just now getting together. So he's finishing up his teaching this summer, and that's when we'll be spending the rest of kind of this, you know, starting in the end of July on through February, working on weekends together. I'll be up in Maryville. He'll be down in our area of North East Missouri and putting it all together and basically giving him the context to interview the man, his family, and all the Kabbalah rabbis and everybody that have been involved all the way through.
Yeah, now, go ahead, Rick.
I was just going to say, is this basically only people that are familiar with the Kabbalah would be familiar with the Dybbuk, or is this something that is runs really deep in Jewish tradition?
Basically, from the context, I have people who are professors of history that contact me, maybe of Greek origin, and they say that this relates to something very similar from thousands of years ago. They have nothing really, though the Greeks and the Jewish language, you know, basically there is interaction between the cultures. But what they say that within the Greek culture, you would take two round clay bowls and put the familiar tokens in them, seal them, plant them in a cemetery to create the energy and do something similar. And so it's not just limited to the Jewish faith, this idea of creating this type of kind of almost a worshiping piece to do something, usually against someone.
Right. Yeah, it's actually, in a way, when I was at the website, it sort of reminded me of another, legend of Jewish origin of the golem. When the Hungarian rabbi created the golem to take care of, you know, the enemies of the Jewish people, I think it was in the late 19th or early 20th century, you know, take care of all the anti-Semites. And the only way you could turn it off was with a special spell. And I believe it, you know, was associated with the Kabbalah as well. So, you know, Kabbalah mysticism is complex but interesting.
And for those listeners that really are getting excited about what I'm saying is looking at the Jewish mysticism, almost everything that we do in the paranormal or any information that you have that might be Wiccan or the dark magic or those types of things actually has its origins somewhere probably in the mysticism of the last 2,000 years. And for those people, what I'd highly recommend, a book that was really, when I was doing my research a couple years ago, unavailable, is called The Sefer, S-E-P-H-E-R, Ha-H-A, Razim, R-A-Z-I-M, and it's on the website. You can actually buy that at Amazon Books. There's only a few, but it really gives the detail, ritual, and process of what goes on with a lot of these things. If you want to know actually everything that's ever been done in Jewish mysticism, then I recommend the Trachtenberg book, which is Jewish, you know, magic and superstition, also available. And these have been, I've spent, you know, years reading them and really have opened my eyes to a whole different way of seeing the paranormal. And as I said, though I was never a fan of it, you get better at understanding what you're dealing with, or at least what's behind the thought of spitting, which was done with the Dybbuk box, or use of hair, which is with the Dybbuk box. You start to understand all these sacrifices and their origin and why they were used.
But now, what exactly is the significance of the wine? Is that an offering?
It really is. That's usually done at the beginning to kind of set the tone. And basically, as in many rituals that are not, you know, of various faiths, the use of some type of a wine is very common. And sometimes using that as a libation and an offering, that not only do you take some, but then it is given also.
So what does the family feel like they need to undo? Because you were saying that they feel like they need to undo something and that that's what the purpose of this box is. What is it that they feel that they need to undo?
They feel that a lot of really bad things came once it was released from the family. And part of it was actually to find ways that using the box will actually benefit those that are less fortunate. And so when I was in Portland, we really spent a lot of time working with the family members that had actually had physical harm done to them as a result of this created box, which was really maybe meant to answer questions. It might have been a little bit of a revenge factor, but within that, those within the family surrounding it got hurt. So it's like, what can we do to make amends? And then what can we do to make amends to humanity in general? Because when you dabble in basically the mysticism, occult, the paranormal, you have unbalanced things. And the best way to unbalance it is to come back to life and help those less fortunate, including things like food pantries. These were things that the family felt was giving in any way to people who do not even know it's coming their way, or helping them who have nothing else, sheer desperation. The funny thing is, the family really feels that if some way some of these things can come around, maybe there will be the good of releasing this family secret, that there might be some good that can come from it. So maybe in this radio broadcast, hey, see if you can do something to help out someone that's needy. Because, again, the family feels that there's a lot of heaviness and darkness with this. It can be counteracted by just one person doing something good.
Well, I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
No.
Okay. What I just wanted to say is that, you know, I wanted to ask you guys both this question. If this thing, if the Dybbuk, you know, the Dybbuk box obviously is being sold, you know, to different people on eBay, you know, two questions is this. Do you think that the Dybbuk box would have a problem because of the exchange of money happening? And secondly, do you feel that maybe this Dybbuk box is not chosen by people to buy, but the Dybbuk box might actually choose who wants to buy it?
Well, that's an interesting point, because within the book, you'll find when we write this chapter, in the actual bidding of it, I had a set amount and that was it. And I had other bidders against me, though I knew more about the item because of the personal experience with those that were living with it. It gave me the faith to take a bid and put it in. However, there was another woman in the Washington State area near where it was, who was also bidding but was unfamiliar with the process of proxy bids. So every time she mm-hmm. bid, I just put in one lump sum. And she kept seeing herself bidding against herself. And it stopped her, but it stopped her. She finally couldn't understand it on my last bid. Had she taken one more bid, it would have been hers. And she came back and said, you know, with her small children, and she didn't even hindsight think of what she was getting into, it was probably best. But then she also said, yeah, I really think maybe whatever blocked me from finishing really was pointing it to you. And the Jewish rabbis say, look, there's no mistakes in life. You got it because you were the best person. I said, but why not a Jewish person? It's like, because you would look at this with different eyes. We are so familiar with what we do, we would overlook the ritual aspects. You question everything because it's not in your lifestyle. It's not in your upbringing. So the things that strike me as odd, like, what does this prayer mean? A lot of, oh, it's the Shema. That's all. It's just the Shema. But it's like, well, what is the Shema? What does it mean? And then by restudying it, they said, oh my gosh, the prayer was written in such a way that it's holy, but it could be destroyed. And rarely can you use God's word and destroy it. But there was a little bit of a twist in the Hebrew writing that actually made this thing disposable. And that'll all be explained too. But what I'm saying is, I found this because I didn't get it. They would just ignore it as, because they're so used to this prayer, not look at what every single letter that was there. They just saw it and didn't even read it like we do often. So, again, these things kind of strike me that I think maybe I was supposed to get it and unravel it. But, again, ultimately, I think some good will come from it.
Well, you definitely
let me add
story.
Something to that, if I can, about the box choosing people. I mean, this might be completely coincidence, but it might not. Jason and I came in contact with each other because we were both guests on a radio program in Australia last Halloween. And I listened to his part, and afterward I sent him an email telling him that I enjoyed listening to him and him discuss the Dybbuk box. And when we started talking, you know, we're both named Jason, and we found out that we live like 2.5 miles or 2.5 hour drive from each other.
Wow.
You know, it's just a little bit too bizarre to me to be a coincidence, but it's pretty neat to think about.
Mm-hmm. Well, and, you know, maybe you are the person who was meant to write this story, or maybe you're the person that the Dybbuk box wants to write this story. So
I'm not going to touch it.
Yeah, you knew where I was going, because that's what I was going to ask. Have you guys haven't come together yet, so you haven't had any contact with the box at all, is that correct?
Right.
Yeah. We've only been negotiating, working on the book for a couple of weeks, but we're definitely going to do this. And as soon as he finishes his class load and I get back from Vietnam, I've got a trip planned there, which ought to be freaky. I hear the mysticism there is pretty amazing. I'm just going to visit my sister. But the thing about it is, when we come together, Hollywood expected a reproduction. They don't want to put any actor near the thing. So there is an identical copy of this item. And it took almost 6 months and about $1,000. It is not a cheap thing to have made. The rare granites, the antique pieces that are in it, the construction, it really took 6 months and about $1,000 worth of money that they fronted just so no actor or actress would have to see the real thing. They will photograph the real thing, but in the movie they will always be acting with the stunt box, so to speak.
The stunt box.
So Jason Offutt gets to work with the stunt box, so he gets all the feelings, but none of the curse.
Well, it won't have the smell, though.
I have a cat. I have a cat, so I know what
that's true, and get some jasmine perfume in the cat, and you're golden.
We're still negotiating that it can, within the Cassia arc, be smelled its normal odor, so I will let Jason take a whiff. And then he'll become addicted.
That's right. Then it's going to be your precious. My precious.
Hey, so ultimately, we'll probably end up being buried with me. So,
is that still? That was what you weren't sure last time I talked to you what was going to happen to it. So that's what you think you'll do, is have it be buried with you. You're the final owner.
I really think I am, because I just don't know what else to do with it. So, just plop it in with me. That'll be fine. Of course, my son now is saying, well, that's not going to happen. So there it goes. The curse continues.
How old is your son?
He's in college.
Oh, and yeah, he wants it, doesn't he?
He just doesn't want it to be thrown in the ground.
Well, yeah.
If you paid good money for it, you know.
See, it goes back to the original family. You trust your family to do what's right, and no, they don't.
I know. So I have a question from the chat room, and what they want to know is, if the box is locked up like it is right now in the ark, do bad things still happen around it? Do things still happen around it?
It does. It's kind of like string theory, in the sense that as soon as it's being thought on and worked on. I'm surprised this interview is going so well, because the last time I gave an interview and everything was fine, it completely messed up the person's, you know, it's like, what? I always do these interviews. Nothing's fine. Static things they don't hear, I hear on my end. And this happens continually. So you guys are doing pretty well, but just thinking or working with it almost draws it through whatever protection you have. So the best thing is to keep it sealed and then not even think of it. I think to keep it calm.
Think of it. So the people in the chat room could be really mad at us before the night is over. Is that what you're telling me?
As bugs crawl out of their sinks. And you mentioned the odors, the oppression. The worst thing that ever happened to me was to come in my house when the Dybbuk box had been out and literally be hit with a stench and an odor that I just couldn't even get into the house. And so I had to go in and figure out what was going on. And what had happened was the water had been literally sucked out of the toilets, which you actually have these traps, and it's called stink pipes and stuff. But basically, there's a lot of smell in sewers that never comes into your home because of a water plug. And so I called the water company saying, okay, I realize you must have been doing something in the neighborhood. This is fairly common. The water got sucked out of my toilets, and everybody's crap in the entire village is now in my home. And
nice.
Wow.
They said, well, yes and no. If your plug was pulled out, but do you realize the amount of suction that would have to happen? And I said, well, what? Weren't you working in town? It's like, no. And as a matter of fact, this is not common. And we don't know what happened. Now, the simple solution was, after I flushed once, the plug was reestablished and the protection was there again. But I had basically the entire house smelling of feces and urine from the entire town. And they say this is demonic oppression because whenever you're messing around, and this was at the time of dealing with making the movie. The day the contract was signed, I came home, we agreed to it, that there would be a movie. The entire house was filled with this crap.
Wow.
So Jason,
the children fear it.
What I want to know is if Jason has a stink pipe clause in his contract, just in case.
Nothing ever happens to me usually.
I can hardly.
Knock on wood, quick.
Yeah.
Well, I think even if you don't believe in the power of the Dybbuk box, you know, it should still be respected as being a part of somebody else's culture and
family. I completely believe in it. That's why I do believe.
You're just not going. You have a healthy respect for it. You're not going to be mocking it. So that's been one of the things that we joked about after we had you on last time, Jason, was the don't mock the box, because of course when we had you on last time in the middle of our broadcast, one of our panelists, J.D. Harrison, had a tornado heading for his house. And from what you say, that's fairly common.
Oh, yeah. Tornadic activity consistently. That's actually how we ended up with the acacia wood. You cannot get acacia, only grows in the Middle East, except that after the war, it appears that obviously some of the Jewish population settled in Florida and planted what is considered the most sacred tree, which is the acacia. It grows slow. It's real sappy. It has this gorgeous bloom and scent to it, which is interesting. And going back to the box, this beautiful fragrance, and it's used in all their temples. It was used in the Ark of the Covenant when they put the stones in. This is the container. So this was the idea. You need to get an acacia tree. It's like, where am I going to get an acacia tree? Well, this 50-year-old tree was wiped out by a hurricane, and the wood was cured, and it was presented to me as a solution. One tree, one form of wood, and now seal the damn thing. So it's like, okay.
Wow.
And you did.
And I did.
When's the last time you had it out then?
I actually had to have it out about a month ago to take some photographs of it that were needed for something in Hollywood. And so they wanted to see the original and the copy to see that it was a decent copy. And actually, you couldn't tell them apart. So it's a pretty good copy.
Yeah, very good.
And meanwhile, I was taking in the scent, which is the normal scent, not the urine, not the jasmine, but the normal box scent. And it is. It's just a real heady, really addictive smell. Almost like the only thing I can think of is like sandalwood. It is just such a clean and pure and a desirable scent, you know.
That's interesting. And does something like that, would something like that, just a piece of wood or something made from wood, would it retain a scent like that? I have a cedar chest, and it still has nice cedary smell to it, and it was my grandmother's, you know.
Yeah, but the wood is mahogany, and no, mahogany doesn't typically have a scent.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I mean, it's a hard wood. It grows slow. It's sappy. It's bug-proof. It's fireproof. It's drought-proof. So it really is a great wood, except that in all the process, it doesn't typically have an odor. And that's what's really odd about it, is it shouldn't have any smell.
Interesting. Well, now, I know one of the things that is fairly common with the box is burning in the eyes. Now, Jason Offutt, have you had any of that? As you started to talk about this, have you been more on the lookout for odd, strange, coincidental things? Or are you just sort of walking into it, and if something comes up, you'll evaluate it as it comes?
Yeah, I'll deal with it when it comes. If you start thinking about things, they will happen. I have seasonal allergies, so yeah, my eyes have been burning.
So this isn't just, you know, for people who happen to look upon the Dybbuk box and then all of a sudden their eyes start burning.
No, it's goldenrod.
Yeah. It's goldenrod. Out here, it's the yellow stuff. I live in Washington State, and they planted this yellow stuff, scotch broom, along the edges of the freeway, thinking, oh, it's so pretty. Oh, my God, it's hideous. Do you guys have that in other parts of the country, too, or is it just in Washington?
I've never seen it.
Oh, my gosh. It's probably the most allergic stuff ever. But that's off topic. Sorry about that.
Well, it does bring up one of the things by having the box. What bothered me for years before we got it sealed was choking constantly. And about the time the fluid get out of my lungs, and it'd be just spit. I mean, you just literally start choking to death on nothing. And again, I was equating this. Well, was this having to do with the Jews being gassed? Because the process was that they'd literally choke on the mucus before they'd actually suffocate in some cases with the different gases that were used in the carbon monoxide and stuff. And that's what over and over was happening, was constantly things of the burning eyes, hives just constantly breaking out. But these were things that were not common to me. Listlessness and just no ability to sleep. And again, it's like once I assured myself that it was put away and I was safe from it, I was. And again, is it mind over matter or what? But again, the connectivity of us and this forest of matter that we live in. I mean, everything, we're just being drenched in wavelengths and molecules and atoms. And so is it also connected that just thinking about it brings it forth into your life? So I don't know. I just try to play it safe.
Okay. Now I'm going to say something real quick, and this is probably going to light up the chat room, but I'm not kidding you. My left eye was like, felt like it was burning for a half a second.
Before we talked about the burning eyes, or after?
When you were talking about the burning eyes, it's like my left eye started to feel like it was burning and started to water.
Star suggestion, you think?
It could be. I don't know. that was really strange.
Well, here's the thing. The last time we gave an interview with Australians, that was in around Halloween, because they wanted to do the show, I forewarned them. They were in a drought. I said, just let you guys know, and they talk about this. I said, the box is giving me this strange impression because it's tornadic activity. I said, do expect something that would be like a monsoon. And this was like weeks before. I said, just when we do the interview, prepare for it. And there's like, yeah, it's like we're in a drought. We haven't had rain in years, and you're predicting a monsoon? Of course, the thing is, the interview got delayed and stuff because they were literally being washed out, that only in their area did they get hit with torrential rains that literally flooded everything. As soon as they tried to get to start the show, and as soon as the show was over, it ended. It's like, well, wow. There it is. And so just weird things like that, you know, I don't know. We'll write about them. You get to read them all.
Well, somebody in the chat room wants to know if the box has been tested. And I know that there's been some testing done on the box, so why don't you talk a little bit about that?
Right, because we have access at a medical school to have bio labs, and we're very concerned about human remains and what can happen from bloodborne pathogens and such. We went ahead and had it checked, because the fear was when I first got the box, my eyes also ended up basically almost bleeding, and I figured, okay, just give it a day or two, I'll be fine. After weeks of it, and really people started keeping away from me because they figured I had the worst case of pink eye that they'd ever seen, and why wasn't I taking care of it? Well, I went to the eye doctor, and I said, look at this. He said, well, you've had a spontaneous drying. So I went to another one. I thought, well, this is ridiculous. He goes, yeah, he put some yellow stuff in and looked at him. He goes, yeah, your eyes basically have dried out. It's like, why have they dried out? He goes, there's no explanation. It's not, again, really common. But the reason why your eyes have done this is they basically have just stopped wetting themselves. And it's like, okay. So basically he goes, take these drops. You've got fake lubricant and you should be better. Well, it is, except for that it left basically vision problems. And this is a common trait of the box. So I thought, there must be ammonia on this. But we took the black light. We looked for any type of human material. We scoured it for cyanide, which is very common to coat things in. We looked for ammonia that could be of just laying on it, that people have been touching it and causing these illnesses because of the box. But basically in the lab, they said, it's just wood with a little bit of lime juice. And that shouldn't be causing your problems, you know. That's basically what the professors had to say. And they swabbed it, and they experimented, and they poured chemicals on it. And they said, "That's just a piece of wood." What's the problem? It's like, I can't see. That's the problem.
You know, I just wanted to let all of our latecomers know that tonight we're dealing with the Dybbuk Box and its owner, Mr. Jason Haxton, and paranormal author Jason Offutt, for those who have come in late.
The brave soul who has agreed to write about the Dybbuk Box.
Yes.
Actually, have his picture taken with it.
Yeah, live under, if anything live happens under the to same me because roof. Of this, my wife's going to be ticked.
You know, maybe you should get your picture taken kissing it or something. See if anything happens. Oh, God, I just mocked the box. I'm in trouble.
I'm sorry. I was just going to say that it's really funny that you guys say that, because whenever I go on an investigation, two things my wife says to me. One, have fun. Two, don't bring anything home with you. So I'm
exactly
trying to be
what
as
my
careful
wife
as possible.
She says, have fun. Just never bring any. Don't bring your work home with you.
Sometimes it happens anyway.
That brings up a good story, because when I was actually following the advice of the various rabbis to seal this thing, which usually takes 10 Jewish men, which I didn't have handy, so I did the best I could. But in the process of sealing it, you were then supposed to cleanse yourself. I was using everybody's. The Wiccans were saying cleanse yourself in basil, and that was a good idea, whatever. So upon doing this, took off my clothes after doing this and took a good basil bath, which is supposed to be, it smells great, you feel good, and it's supposed to cleanse your body.
And you crave spaghetti when you're done, garlic bread.
So needless to say, while I'm in the shower cleaning up, all of a sudden I hear from the room is, what have you been in? And like, was I in poison ivy? It's like, what? And it's like, what have you been in the beans? I thought, what beans? And she goes, your jeans. What has been in your jeans? And I said, nothing. She goes, my hand basically was caustically burned. I mean, it looked like an acid burn up her hands. She goes, I picked them up. And all of a sudden, my hand started basically getting chemical burns. What did you touch? I said, those pants are clean. The only thing that might have got on them was a little bit of smoke during the ritual, and it's like, there's nothing on him. I wasn't even outside. I wasn't even outside of the house. And she's like, it's like spider bites or something. There's no bugs that bit you. And she goes, well, I'm not touching them. So I picked them up. I washed them. I had no problem. But the funny thing was, that's an issue where, you got to be careful what you bring home. You might hurt your family, so be careful.
Yeah. Well, so tell me about how your family feels about the box. Are they indulgent about it? Do they wish you didn't have it? What's your family's feeling about this whole thing?
I would say, I have a teenage daughter and a college age son, but they have lived with this for 7 years. As a matter of fact, the funny thing is, when I first heard the story, I never had any dreams that it would be in my possession. So, of course, I told them the story, and they thought, oh, my gosh, that's the scariest story we ever heard. And my daughter thought, yeah. And so she told her friends. She goes, yeah, there is this box, and it gave a woman a heart attack, and ghostly shadows go everywhere, and your lights explode. She goes, Dad, the girls won't come spend the night at our house anymore. I said, well, didn't you tell them we don't own it? She goes, it doesn't matter. Just the fact that I told them the scariest story they've ever heard, they don't ever want to come to our house just to be careful. And again, the funny thing is, when I actually acquired it, I never told the family. And things started going very wrong very quickly. And so I was on the phone basically trying to find the people who said, hey, look, if there's problems, I'll go ahead and take it. They were out of town, of course. And as I was sitting there panicking, in my chair, I had just got off the phone, my son walks into the room, and it's like, what's up? And it's like, nothing much, but there was this scent of jasmine, and it was only in this one spot in the house, and I said, just come here. He walks through it. I said, what is that? And, this was a kid at that time, was 11. He just looked me straight in the eyes. He says, you've got the Dybbuk box. And it's like, he goes, you've brought the Dybbuk box here. And I said, well, how do you know? He goes, this smell, this scent. He goes, this isn't anything that's ever been in our house. He goes, it can only be one thing. And I said, well, yeah, but don't worry, we're moving it. And so we went out, and we got in the truck, and it was a brand new truck. I mean, it was like new car smell. The scent of cat urine was so thick in there that he really started sweating. He goes, Dad, it's like, what? He goes, the car is filled with cat piss smell. I said, no, it isn't. He goes, Dad, this is a brand new car, and it smells like cat piss. What have you done? It's like, trust me, I'll take care of it. I'll take care of it. So my kids have always been kind of freaked out from it. And no, they do not like it. They do not like to be near it. They don't like it out. They don't even know, like to know anything about what's going on with it or where of it is at. And so we just keep it that way.
Well, maybe they should bury it with you then, huh? Huh. Wow.
There it is.
So Rick was just saying that, so your eyes got done burning, did they, Rick? Rick sent a private message and said, my eyes are still burning.
Yeah, I am totally and completely serious. My eyes were burning, now they're done, and they're actually starting to get the moisture back into it. But I don't scare easily, but, you know, I'm going to take that as being like a warning of some kind.
Yeah, well, like anything else, yeah, that's why I keep it. People's like, why don't you have it? You know, people want it for the wrong reason. And that's another reason for setting up the website and trying to stay clear. Because there have been quasi-threats, but people who are like, you know, I'm coming to get it. It's like, oh my gosh, these freaks. I mean, it's like these Middle Easterns and stuff. It's like, you know, they find out about it and it's like, they're going to fly here. Luckily we're in such a rural area. It really is pretty tricky. First of all, you can't get here. And second of all, if you get here, everybody knows everybody. So it's like, what are you doing here? But no, we've had all these weird things happen. My neighbor, he was a real nice guy and he was so absorbed into its history and stuff. And it's like, you know, really lay off of it, Ray. You know, and within a couple weeks, he was found dead of a heart attack in his chair. And the man was 50. And it's kind of like, oh, okay, not a good idea. And he was aware of all these issues of strokes and things coming from it. And he, I get these messages from him constantly about it, emails. It's like, you know, Ray, lay off of it. Just stay clear. And all of a sudden, a week later, the sister called. It's like Ray was found dead in a chair. He had a heating pad on his chest, but it appears he just died of a heart attack. It's like, was that expected? She goes, no, there's no sense to it. And so I do try to, you know, people have tried to help, have lost loved ones. They've had themselves go into stroke conditions, Wiccans and stuff. And it's like their house starts to become freezing and dropping in temperature, even if it's summer. And it's like, yeah, so just be careful with this stuff. I do. That's why I keep it sealed and keep away from it. It's like, I'm going to tell the story of everything I figured out. But even as I do that, I keep a distance. I don't want to mess with it.
It's a good thing you're already married, because I don't think anybody would date you if they knew you had that thing. As a matter of fact, I'm wondering, I mean, I know you told me how you and Jason got together. He agreed to write this book. But really, Jason? Are you're okay with this?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Like I said, these things, nothing really ever happens to me. I'm not taunting the box. I am not taunting the box. But I have a healthy respect for stuff like this, and I'm going to approach it as respectfully as I can. And if I do have a heart attack, my wife will beat me to no end.
If you live through it,
it's not going to happen. Self-preservation on my part. I will not let my heart stop.
There you go. Well, you might want to get yourself like a bubble to live in while you write the book
bubble
or something.
Boy.
Yeah, you can be bubble boy.
Yeah.
I have a quick question. You know, concerning the Dybbuk box. It's been my experience as a researcher and as well as an investigator that if you are in fact dealing with a demonic, inhuman, elemental entity, whatever you prefer to call it, that these entities can actually learn what frightens you the most and can use that information against you. Has there ever been any talk of that, of people who've owned the Dybbuk box that have, you know, had their worst fears come to life?
And I think that's where the problem came in with some of the earlier owners, was their fear caused things to stay and actually manifest, kind of like during the Salem witch trials, as more and more focus was in it, things got more and more out of control with the little girls that had been working with. And of course, this came from kind of like the Caribbean, you know, voodoo and such. Some of these slaves came and brought their beliefs with them, incorporated them into these good families with the children who they were caring for, and then things started manifesting, and families trying to get away from entities that were slapping, pinching, beating, and it doesn't matter where you go, they're with you. Once you interact, you're stuck kind of with them. And so that's kind of my attitude also, is that initially, early on, I was choking. I was having all these issues, flashes and shadows. Literally, it'd be like a cloud floating. I would be sitting at the computer, and I'd watch a shadow come through the room, and literally, it would go underneath me and out. And it's like, okay, first of all, there's nothing making the shadow in the room that would make it go under you. And then float kind of back through the wall and be gone. And it'd be like, okay, what was that? Or flashes. They're kind of like meteorites, only they're all around you within your home. And almost like it's trying to threaten you. And that what I found is, as I kind of gained my own composure and that relaxation with it and just comfort level, and that I'm not going to focus on these things, then it kind of built a wall and a shield and a distance that was really starting to unravel at the earliest years of it. Now, having had it 7 years, I would say since containing it in the acacia and the gold, in a way, what I'm saying is I can deal with it in a way that it's out of sight and out of mind. And I just try to do it. And it is kind of, what do I do with this thing now? But I, as a historian, have Mayan artifacts, Egyptian, African. I have always treated, because most of the objects from thousands of years had a religious significance, so I have always treated them fairly. And to some degree, it made me feel very confident that having these things would protect me to some degree. Having all these juju gods from Africa and Mayan artifacts from research during the 80s that I gathered on site and such, that at the time I felt I was fairly protected by these things, and realized very quickly, no, not necessarily. So,
well, you can run, but you can't hide.
That's right. I would imagine.
According to warrants.
Yeah. I would imagine, Jason, that if you started out as a skeptic, that you've come to a place where pretty much anything is possible.
I would have to say that it's been a spiritual journey, one that I did not anticipate. My attitude was, you live, you die, it's black, it's done. 7 years of work and research and looking and such, I have come to the realization there is no doubt that there is more. There is absolutely no doubt in my mind. And it's not coming from a Christian attitude or a Jewish attitude, or, you know, but I'm just saying there is no doubt in my mind that there is an element of you that grows, and what you learn here, you will be as you go into this next phase. And it's a part of it is gathering years, you know, 9 linear feet of research on religion and stuff. Suddenly the evidence has become so amazing that there is no doubt in my mind that things can stay here, that there are things that are not us, and that we will go into a different realm when we're done learning in this world. And so, yep. In that sense, that's a good aspect of it, because I think I am more spiritual, and I don't think it's a bad thing.
No, definitely not. So, go ahead, Rick.
I was just going to say, I mean, I believe in, you know, reincarnation, and a lot of my philosophies sort of run along Buddhist guidelines, and you know, I definitely think that it's definitely, you know, reconfirmed that time and time again, any time that I've ever experienced anything paranormal, that we are energy. We have to go somewhere when that energy dies. Like today, for example, I was downstairs working out, and I watched as the temperature gauge went up 1 degree. So there's definitely that energy there. We are kinetic energy, mm-hmm. and it has to go somewhere when we die.
Yep. Yep, definitely. Well, we just have a couple of minutes left, and so I wanted to get the name of the book and when you guys expect it to be out. I know it's just in its infancy.
Well, it'll be called The Dybbuk Box. And it basically,
yay! That's easy.
And basically, the nonfiction, the truth of The Dybbuk Box, and it'll be all the different people throughout the world. That's the funny thing. It's an international artifact. It doesn't just belong in Missouri, though that's where two young men are going to write about it. But basically, it'll be all the population. It'll be explaining, without you wanting maybe to read, all these Jewish texts and stuff. We will bring to you where these ideas come from, why the elements that are in the box actually are there and what they can do. And so to some degree, it will really be an unraveling of all the pieces so that it's there before you in different segments. And of course, Jason Offutt is going to be doing the interviewing, the researching, but he's going to be going through all types of material. We certainly will narrow it down to the key pieces so that you're not wasting 7 years of your time, getting it all, but you will get really the quick and the dirty and what you need to know.
So if people want to learn more about the Dybbuk box, why don't you give us the website?
It is just, and of course, the word Dybbuk, Hebrew doesn't translate necessarily to English verbatim. The letters are really considered different, but it's dibbukbox.com. So just dibbukbox.com, one word, will take you to the website where you can see some research. You can actually see what people are saying. You can see a little bit about what's going on in California, about the upcoming movie. You can actually read the original story and what has followed from that original story. So it really is. It gives you everything I had to start off with and put it together.
It's a great site. First time I saw that site, I fell in love with it. It's a wonderful site. So, Jason Offutt, how about if you give us some links to where people can find your work? I know we're going to have you back on to talk about all of the other paranormal stuff here in the near future. But in the meantime, why don't you give us some website links if people want to contact you, that type of thing?
Well, the best one to go through is my blog. It's From the Shadows. It's from-the-shadows.blogspot.com. Every week I post a new paranormal story, and there are links to all my books, and my email address is there for you to contact me. I'd love to hear from people.
Great. Okay. Well, anything, Jason Haxton, that you wanted to add before we go to break?
Now, I think it's fascinating. I've got to work with just one little piece, and to see how this has grown. It's amazing what's out there for people. And I guess what I'm saying is, looking at it, in your life, there can be things that you can really take the time to really look at, really study, and you might be amazed, because it is all connected, that you don't have to have this item. There are things in your area that you can get involved with if you want to grow spiritually, because I think that's what a lot of this ends up being about when you get into it.
Hey, that's a great way to leave it. So Jason and Jason, thank you very much.
When
we come back after break, we're going to be talking to Andy Selfridge, and Andy is going to talk to us about some equipment. So hold on, and we'll be back in about 2 minutes.
This is Karen Frazier, founder of the Namaste Project. Several months ago, I was really struggling with a number of people in my life. I got tired of being angry all of the time. One day I was driving home thinking about how I could stop being angry when the words "the Namaste Project" popped into my head. In that moment, I understood that every person, even the ones who made me angry, had a light of the divine in them, and if I could just find that light in every person I encountered, then my world would be a better place. The Namaste Project was born. Now I'm inviting you to join me. Visit namasteproject.org to learn how you can change your world. Change happens one person at a time. I hope you'll join me. That's namasteproject.org.
It's Karen Frazier at Paranormal Underground.
And I'm Rick Hale, Paranormal Underground writer.
We're here to invite you to explore the unexplained with Paranormal Underground Radio, live and on the air.
Join us every Thursday night for paranormal talk and great guests from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time on ztalkradio.com.
Thank you.
we're back. So we're having a little bit of trouble getting Andy on the line, but we'll do that in just a minute. So how are the eyes, Rick?
Actually, my eyes do feel better. I'm not trying to hoax anything weird here. I've been pushed and scratched and had things whisper in my ear, and that's the first time I've ever had anything like that happen. That was very strange, but they're good now.
So tell me when it started. Was it after I asked him about it?
It was probably maybe about 2 or 3 minutes into it. All of a sudden, my left eye just started to burn. And then about 2 or 3 minutes after that, my right eye started to burn, and they were both burning, and they started to water, and then they just dried up, and then, bam, they're back to normal again. I don't have any, you know, allergies, you know, any major allergies, not this time of the year anyways. Usually my allergies happen, you know, in the fall, but I have no way to explain that.
Huh. Okay, I think, Andy, are you with us?
Yes, I'm here.
All right, so we have with us now Andy Selfridge, and he is going to talk to us about some. Are you talking about recorders? Was that your plan, Andy?
Yes.
Okay, so Andy is an investigator with the Oklahoma City Ghost Club, and he's a cop. He combines his investigative experience with his law enforcement career. And so he has a strong emphasis on the purity of data collection and the preservation of evidence. So, Andy, let's talk about some gadgets.
All right. First off, I want to say how excited I am to be here. I'm very excited about this new format, and I appreciate the opportunity to come on here and share a little bit of what I learned.
Yeah, we're glad to have you. Thank you so much for doing this. You're kind of one of our resident gadget guys at Paranormal Underground, so we thought this was a good way to bring that into the show.
Well, thank you very much. Real quick, I wanted to mention a few items that have come out this month or going to be coming out this month that might be of interest to paranormal people all out there. So we'll start off with, amazingly enough, an audio recorder. I'm sure everybody's heard of the Zoom line of audio recorders. Mm-hmm. They make some of the higher-end stuff, like the Zoom H2 and the Zoom H4. Well, this month, Zoom announced it will be releasing the Zoom H1, which is basically a two-channel version of the H2, and it's going to have all the advanced recording modes. And let's see here. I believe it goes up to 96 kilohertz.
So it's going to be high def, so it's going to have the same recording quality that the H2 and the H4 do, is that right?
Yes, but without all the bells and whistles.
Mm-hmm. We have an H4, and it makes a huge difference in quality when you capture stuff.
It really does, and this has kind of been what's motivated me to push towards higher quality audio, is that it keeps the other recorders honest.
It does.
And you really don't understand that till you run both of them side by side. Or if you have another investigator running their audio recorder with yours, and they'll come to you and say, listen to this EVP I have, and you can correlate, and you find out that it was somebody shifting in their chair or something.
Yeah, it's a zipper or something. Yeah.
Exactly.
As a matter of fact, if you go to Paranormal Underground and you go in the gallery and you search, there's a post I did, probably about a year ago now, and it's just called High Def Recording Revisited, I think. Or something like that. Just search high def in the gallery, and there's side by side of the Zoom H4 and an Olympus, the exact same snippet that I captured an EVP on. So,
yeah, I'm really excited about this H1 coming out because, let's face it, some of these higher model recorders are a little bit more expensive than your regular voice recorders. But this one's price point is going to be right at $100. And
it's really not that bad.
No, not too bad at all.
And it's got the same DS40 is.
It's got the same mic capsules as the Zoom H2, which is originally the first generation H4 mic capsules. So you're going to get some high quality recording there. And so I'm excited about that. The rumors were it was going to be shipping the 1st of July. I haven't been able to find any place that's actually shipping it yet, but it will be out this month. So. And let's see here. Another neat gadget this been out for about a month now, is the EVP field processor. And for those of you that don't know, Paul Bradford from GHI has his own storefront, and he's going to be selling these as well. And basically, think of this as a VU meter for your EVP recorder. You plug your EVP recorder into it, and it gives you a visual readout. And the school of thought here is you should be able to see an EVP activate the LEDs. Not sure what to think about this yet. It is kind of pricey. It's about $145, and I'm thinking you might be able to reproduce it with a what's known as an LM3914 IC controller and a good LED bar. So I'm going to be doing some experimenting with that and see if it's something similar.
Cool.
I'll write something up on it. So if it's something that the average person can do for cheaper, hey, I'm all about it.
Yeah.
So let's see here. What else? Oh, geophones, as made popular on the Ghost Hunter series. B&H Micro, the people that were putting out the kit for that, have re-released the kit. They've sourced some sensors, and now those are available again. They're $37, or you can buy this time. You can buy just the sensor and do your own experimenting for $20. And what those allow you to do is basically see vibrations, very minute vibrations, via an LED bar. So,
Okay.
But cool. Let's see here.
So when that Tyrannosaurus Rex is running our way, we'll know it's coming.
Exactly.
A little lights will flash.
Now, another thing I'm very excited about, for those that know me, I'm a thermal imaging geek.
You are.
Today, Fluke just announced, and Fluke makes, all sorts of different test equipment. They just announced their TIS thermal imager. It's a low cost, $2,499, which in the thermal imaging world is extremely low cost, rugged imager, and it's fully featured, and I'm very excited to see what comes out of that. Nobody's got any pictures or anything up of it yet, but it's certainly something to consider if your group's looking to purchase a new imager and you want to keep the cost down. So
we use Fluke with MCPRG, and I'm the operator of it. Tony Olszewski actually trusts me with it, which is quite amazing. And I love it. I think it's a great product. I think they make great products, and it's real light and easy to carry.
Personally, I think the Flukes put a better picture out there than the FLIR units, but
yeah.
Unfortunately, they don't subscribe to the school of thought on their modern imagers that it needs video out. And for what we do in our field, it's absolutely necessary. So,
yeah.
Right.
But that pretty much one other thing. I don't know if any of you are familiar with the Creepy Hollow infrared lights, the extenders.
Not I know.
Basically, they're a 4-LED infrared extender light that works off a 9-volt battery. They use a 10-millimeter triple chip, 850-nanometer infrared light. Basically the same thing that your Sony infrared extenders use, and much easier to manage. Those are going into production again over at Creepy Hollow. And Paul has even put the schematics up there, so if you're halfway decent with a soldering iron, the schematics are up there for free. So,
great. Okay.
But anyway, going back to audio recorders, ever since I got my Zoom H2, I've kind of become a bit of an audiophile, perhaps not to the point that others out there on the internet are, but having seen firsthand how these higher quality recorders can keep these lower sample rate and lower frequency response recorders honest, it has really changed my aspect and how I look at EVP. Going back to years past when I used cheaper, just little digital voice recorders, I have to sometimes wonder now if what I wasn't getting was case handling noise or just basically the product of a bad digital conversion or what have you.
But what do you think about some people actually, Andy, say that the crappier the recorder, the more likely you are to capture that EVP because it uses the background noise in the recorder, just kind of like they would with the ghost box using the radio waves. But so I've heard that theory sort of floated, that people say, well, if it's a, you know, the crappier the recorder, the better.
Yeah, and I've heard that as well. As a matter of fact, I used to introduce white noise into my recordings. I don't do that anymore. Honestly, if we can't separate via protocol or recorder quality the difference between the noise and the suspected anomaly, then we're not doing each other any favors. So I don't necessarily subscribe to that school of thought anymore. Having heard side by side with the better sample rates and the better recorders, and knowing the high incidence of false positives based on just the quality of recorder, well, my personal EVPs have they've gone down quite a bit. I've gotten, with the H2, what I would consider to be 6 legitimate EVPs, where it was nothing to get twice that on a regular investigation with just an older RCA or Olympus. So I think there's a lot of mistaken false positives out there. And it's not the fault of the operator, because I've heard some of these files and it sounds like Satan's on the telephone telling you what to do.
Well, I really would rather know whether what I have is actually something anomalous or something that's an artifact, you know. And as soon as I started, for instance, using this Zoom H4, it became so clear to me so quickly how easy it is to identify things as a whisper, especially. I've sort of come to believe that whispers are the orbs of EVPs.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, when it comes to presenting evidence, we've got to produce the cleanest, highest standard of evidence we can. And that's where I'm going with moving up and upgrading my recorder selection. And when you hear the quality of a low noise floor recorder versus what you've probably been using in the past, it'll just blow your mind.
Well, I will say with my Olympus DS40, it actually is a pretty high quality. I mean, it cost me $100, and it's just a, you know, little regular digital voice recorder, just a little higher quality. And it actually gets pretty good quality recordings. But then when you put it next to some of this high def stuff, and Samson isn't the only one that has these high def recorders. There are other people that make them too. I think Samson just does it the most affordably. Is that right?
I'm sorry, you cut out when you said the name.
Oh, Samson, who makes the Zoom H4.
Right.
They're
right,
not the only ones who make these high def recorders. I've seen them through other manufacturers as well. I think Sony makes one, and I know there are other people who make them too, right?
Yes. In fact, I just picked up the Sony PCM M10 just about a month ago, and I have to say it's the best recorder I've ever used. The clarity is amazing. It's everything the Zoom H2 should have been, but it is about $50 to $100 more, depending on where you go.
Say how much more?
About $50 to $100 more than the Zoom
H2. I thought you said $5,200. I'm thinking, holy crap.
$5,200, I'm sold.
But yeah, I really am impressed with that PCM M10 from Sony. And the number one thing I love about it most of all, in addition to the great sound quality, is the battery life. You can get between 30 and 50 hours per set of AA's.
Wow.
Depending on your recording mode and what have you. And I used to chew through a set of AA's in the Zoom about once every 2 hours. So.
Wow. So, and is the microphone different on the high def recorders? My husband mentioned that it's like a certain, it's actually a different type of a microphone. And maybe that's a total geek question and he only knows that. I don't know.
Well, it depends on the recorder. They're much higher quality with a lower noise floor. That's very evident, but they're all basically the same electric design. Another thing that I want to branch out to, as soon as my finances allow it, is XLR microphones with phantom power, and we can really push the noise floor down with a setup like that. But that's going to be a little bit down the road. But yeah, these this portable digital recorder revolution, I want to call it, is really gaining ground with a bunch of different manufacturers. And the lower they can get the noise floor and the preamp noise, the better. So
cool. Yeah. Well, look forward to seeing what's coming out, because I like I say, I've really been impressed with the Zoom. So I'm sure that, you know, as they can make them cheaper, there'll be more things for people to try and more things that, you know, the average broke ghost hunter can give a try to. So, hey, one of the things that we used to do in our old podcast that we aren't doing with this new format is we had a roundtable. And so we decided that we wanted to incorporate our roundtable a little bit. And Andy, I hope you'll stay around to do this, and we'll bring Cheryl and Chad back too. And what it is the roundtable lightning round. So I'm going to, I know, there are no prizes awarded at the end. I'm going to give a subject, and I'd like each of you to take turns just giving me a one sentence opinion on what that subject is. So, in what order? Well, so we'll go Andy, Rick, Chad, Cheryl. How's that sound?
Perfect.
That works.
Okay. So, Andy, did you hear any of the Dybbuk box, or are you familiar with the Dybbuk box?
I didn't get to hear anything on tonight's show leading up, but I have heard the podcast in the past and familiarized myself with the threads on the board. So.
Okay. So we'll start with that for our lightning round Dybbuk box. Andy, go.
Don't bring it to my house.
Rick.
Please don't burn my eyes again.
Chad.
I think it's a little bit, played up a little bit.
Okay, and Cheryl.
Don't mock the box.
I'm going to go with that one, too. I almost did, and I caught myself. I hope I caught myself in time. Okay, so this week, and not this week, but recently, Robert Best, you all know who I'm talking about, the gentleman with the phone booth ghost trap thing, actually issued a challenge to the gentleman from GA that he would capture a ghost before they would. And if he could do that, he challenged them to go to quit their show. So there has been no response from Ghost Adventures yet. Andy.
Well, despite being an Olympic-class EMF meter thrower, I don't think that the GA crew would have anything to gain by even acknowledging this challenge, and he just needs to be relegated to the obscurity he deserves.
Rick?
Yeah, I think the guy's a complete and total nutcase. He's the dude that threw that EMF detector. Yeah, he. In my opinion, he's gone.
Allegedly threw.
He threw it.
Come on. Chad?
I think this is pretty much an attempt to try to repair any credibility he might have or had.
How do you think that's going to work?
I don't think it's going to work for him. I think he's done.
I just broke the lightning round rule. Sorry. Cheryl?
We are going to have the GA crew on Paranormal Underground Radio in the near future, and we are going to ask them about that challenge.
Oh, very good. I can't wait to talk to them. Okay, so this week, I believe it was this week, Yvette Fielding announced that she was going to be leaving Most Haunted. Andy?
I don't think she would be announcing that unless she had something else significant lined up, so I'm sure we've not heard the last of it.
Yeah, Rick?
I think Yvette Fielding is strangely hot, and she will be missed.
Chad?
Well, I think, lover or hater, I think she, basically this is the end of an era.
Yeah, Cheryl?
I think that she's quite busy. She has her own TV network to deal with, and that's why she's leaving Most Haunted.
Okay. All right. The next one is, I only have to say one thing, and you guys can say more than that. Ready? Orbs. Andy.
Fine collection of airborne particulate matter.
Rick.
I agree.
Chad.
I agree.
Cheryl, you got anything original?
I think relying on orbs as evidence in regard to paranormal investigation is just too subjective.
Okay, our final lightning round question. You ready? Two words. Twilight movies. Andy.
I'm Team Gozer, so I don't know what all the hype's about.
Rick?
Robert Pattinson, your unclean hair is not dreamy.
Chad?
I vow to never watch one of those movies.
Cheryl?
I guess I'll be watching them without Chad, because I'd actually like to watch the movies. I've never read the books.
Okay, and I have to toss one in, and this is in the words of my wonderful husband, Jim, as we took my teenager to see the very first one, the Twilight movie. He leaned over and he whispered to me, "I think I just grew an ovary."
love it.
I know, it was perfect. So, okay, you guys have any other hot topics you want to cover really quickly? We have just a few minutes left. Anyone?
Do we have any paranormal shows that are going to be like premiering their seasons here soon? Like GHI?
Yes. Yeah. GHI is premiering July 14th, I believe. And like we said earlier, Scott Tepperman, the new GHI investigator, is going to be our guest next week. Aside from GHI, I know Sci-Fi has two other new shows that we're going to be covering in our July issue. Heidi, one of our writers, wrote about them, and one of them is called Mary Knows Best, and she's a psychic, and it involves her family drama, so to speak. And the other one is what's it called? It's Paranormal Fact or Fiction or something like that.
Fact or crap, huh?
Yeah.
Well, I think that go ahead.
Isn't that like that show that Jonathan Frakes was doing, Beyond Belief, Fact or Fiction?
Yeah, yeah, this is a completely different show. I'm probably messing up the title, but yeah.
Oh, I saw that when I was when I finally got home from the emergency room after the whole initial kidney stone thing, and I'm not sure I had a lot of drugs in me. But I watched that Jonathan Frakes thing. I'd never seen that before. That's where I got it. I kept calling it Fact or Crap because that's a game. Have you heard of the game Fact or Crap?
No.
It's a game my family plays. You can actually buy it like a board game. And so I saw that Jonathan Frakes, but he was on it. And then some other Star Trek-y kind of guy hosted it too, I think.
There's the title.
Mr. Barbara Streisand.
Bobcat, Haunted Hillbillies. PTN in the chat got the name. It's Fact or Faked, the Paranormal Files.
Thank you, Haunted Hillbillies. I think Haunted Hillbillies is going to be a new show on Z-Talk, and I'm looking forward to hearing that. So, okay, so we have just a couple of minutes left. We're going to wrap it up here. Cheryl, was there anything else that we were missing that we needed to toss in? We have next week, we have Scott Tenerman, right?
Tepperman.
Scott Tenerman's the guy from
Yep, that's
Scott Tenerman must die.
Someone else. It's okay.
Sorry. You can tell I have teenagers.
Karen, we're also going to have Michael Kravchuk. He's known as the Ghost Gadget guy. He's going to be updating us as well on some new equipment.
Okay.
So I just wanted to mention that.
Awesome.
Okay. And so we will be here every Thursday. We have some great guests already planned. We'll have Lloyd Auerbach stopping in to talk to us here within the coming weeks. Who else do we have lined up?
He is a god in the paranormal world, sorry.
I love Lloyd. He is amazing. He's entertaining. He's brilliant. I love Lloyd.
He is. He's really educational and very interesting to talk to. We had a blast when we had him on our show last year on the podcast. We're also going to have, as I mentioned, the GH crew come on. We're going to have NEPA Paranormal. They're going to come on and talk about some interesting cases that they had. We're going to have past life regressionist Melissa Watts.
We're going to have an EVP show.
Right. We're going to have an EVP and personal experiences show.
Awesome.
We're going to have Stan Romanek. I can't forget Stan because we profiled him in the magazine in February of last year, I believe it was.
The alien in my window guy.
Yeah, he actually fascinates me. So I know he's kind of controversial to some people, but to me he's fascinating. And his case as an, I guess you would say, an alien experiencer or UFO experiencer is really interesting. Some people call it the most.
Sean B. too.
Right. Yeah. Some people call Stan's
the author of the Paranormal Cookbook. Mm-hmm. Sorry, Cheryl. Right. Go ahead.
Oh no, I was just going to say that Stan's case. Some people call the most scientifically documented UFO case ever. So
he's going to be an interesting one.
Right.
So we hope that you guys will tune in, and I'm really keeping my fingers crossed that the next time you're here, I will. A, no longer sound like a teenage boy whose voice is changing because my cold will be gone, and B, will no longer be on narcotics, although I may not be as entertaining. I don't know. We'll just have to wait and see.
And I promise not to blank and sound like a complete and total idiot about the own crew that I run with.
So we'd like to invite everybody back each Thursday on ztalkradio.com from 9 to 11 Eastern, because we're going to have a lot of great guests on and have some great conversation about paranormal topics.
And Andy, you'll be back too, right?
Absolutely.
Excellent. Okay. So then we're going to wrap it up, and we will see you next Thursday, 6 o'clock Pacific, 9 o'clock Eastern.
Thanks for listening.
On Paranormal Underground Radio.
If you'd like to be a guest on Paranormal Underground Radio, email editor@paranormalunderground.net. Until next week, keep exploring the unexplained at www.paranormalunderground.net. And join us again next week for Paranormal Underground Radio on the Z-Talk Radio Network.